This conference will.
Last week we kind of went through laying the foundation. You know, we talked about Robert Fritz's book, Your Life as Art, and how we're in a position where we all have a blank canvas in front of our face. And some of you say, Mary Jo, I'm 55, because I'm 55, so I should use that age. And you go, how can I have a blank canvas? I have one that's filled full of all sorts of, and I go, I get it that you guys have lived a life, each one of us, whether you're 25 or 55, we've all lived a number of years already. But the reality is that at any stage in your life, today becomes the first day of the rest of your life. And you need to plan that out. Now, your past is going to impact that because you can't say today I no longer have my four children or I no longer have my spouse. I guess you could say that, but I'm not suggesting you do that. But the idea is that we have parts of our life and our past that are going to carry forward for us, like, you know, where we currently are living, our spouse, our family members, those kind of things. But the reality beyond that is, what are you going to create in your life? That's up to you. That's really something you choose. And so we talked about that last week, and we talked about how, you know, important it is to understand, you know, and work with different aspects of who you are. And the starting point for me always around making goals and setting goals is, what's your vision? Because if we don't have a correct vision, if we don't have a, and I shouldn't say correct, or I should say an accurate vision of for you, because each one of us has different visions, not somebody else's vision for you, but what is your vision for you? And some of you have lived your life in such a selfless way, you have never thought about a vision for yourself. Well, the Lord lays desires on your heart, so you've got to start listening to those and not always attributing them to selfish means, but, you know, the Lord's working with you on your heart and laying on your heart where you want to be. Other of us have no problem. I you know, every day I come up with new vision for myself because I see other needs in our society, and that's what fills my heart. I see needs, my heart gets filled with just a real drive and a real desire, and I let my creativity flow. In fact, this week was very insightful for me because I'm doing exactly what you're doing. I was asking these questions. I was saying, how am I going to play this out? What about my foundation? How do I start funding it in a better way? And I start just chewing on different ideas, and things come to my head, and I really appreciate the free thought and free thinking about anything being possible. So that's what you need to do, and you need to really focus on what that vision is for you. And hopefully some of you spent some time this week with that. And we talked a little bit about the mechanics of the process and talked about structural tension, the importance to know the difference between your current reality and what a goal is. And I don't know, did anyone do this sheet? I gave you sheets last week. One of the sheets was current reality versus your goal. Anyone fill that out, or are you still waiting to set your goal? Because I know I didn't get you into setting goals yet. I kind of had you laying the foundation. But I know most of us have some goals that we'd like to. And if you haven't done that, start, you know, make sure when you do it, going back to last week, between current reality and your goal, from current reality, step one should be at the bottom. We usually think in terms of step one at the top. It's step one, step two, and it tracks all the way up to hitting your goal. And it's a neat process. I did it. I took one of my goals around my GPV because I already have set that one for next year. And I just worked through what it needs to look like, and it's just fun to do that because all the different steps are kind of those obvious steps, the things that we know that are going to work to increase our GPV. And what do they involve? It's involving talking to new people every single week. How many am I going to talk to? It's a numbers thing. How I'm going to, you know, retain the people I have, so it's my retention commitment. And then how do I recontact old business builders and see get reactivation? That's part of it. Finding new business builders, what's my strategy around that? And setting goals monthly, and then what kind of activities I'm going to do to create that action for myself and for other people. So it was kind of like those are the kind of steps I put in there. The next thing I asked you to do is circle characteristics of a good leader. Did anyone do that exercise? Anyone want to get off mute and share if they did? They looked at my I kind of call it my to-be list. Anyone work on that? Want to share? Very quiet group today. because some of these, it's intriguing that some of us, I found myself when I worked through the characteristics of a good leader from last week, I went through and I saw where maybe some of the things that I thought I had aren't as strong as they used to be. So they would probably be words that I never would have found on my to-be list 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But because of some of the turmoil the company's been through over the last few years, I think sometimes that tends to impact us, even though we may not see it impact us. And so I had to go back and look at it and say, wow, where's my commitment? Like commitment level. I've always been totally committed to Manatech. And sometimes, you know, I kind of looked at that and I said, whoa, what's happening with that? Maybe I need to put that as my big to be. So I'm really using that word now on my to be list. And I don't look at myself as being uncommitted, but I feel like some part of me, and I don't know how many of you may feel the same way, you've been around Mantic for a lot of years, and you feel like, well, maybe my commitment started waning a little bit. Well, we got to really hammer that down. We got to put that nails back in that, you know, to really hammer that down. Because if you're not committed, then there's no real possibility of creating the results that you want. You know, so the commitment's got to be underlying there, so making sure that that's strong and has every ounce of energy behind it. So you want to pick out your characteristics. And then the other thing I asked you to do was do the annual review of your Manatech business, which was activities in 2009 and then proposed changes in 2010. And that was very insightful. I haven't had an opportunity yet to go through this with Lydia, excuse me, because I was traveling last week for a few days, 3 days. But it's important that we do this, and I came up with a couple new ideas that I wanted to run by her too and look at it, how we're going to, you know, do our business a little differently in 2010, because it's always about change. Life is about change. We're either green and growing or we are ripe and rotting. The other thing I'm going to have Lydia send out to you, just as a follow-up to last week, we came across this in our 100-day challenge program that I'm doing and 90-day challenge that I'm passing on to the group that are participating with me on that. But there, I got a list of called 7 steps that can change your life. And it really is about a review process of 2009 compared to 2010. And so, you know, I gave you the annual review form of my Manatech business where you write down activities you did in 2009, proposed 2010, what change in activity or change in vibration are you going to create in your business. This 7-step process gives you questions. Like, I'll just run through them with you, and then I will send this out to all of you because I'm going to actually attach it to this, the last week's outline, and use it in the future because I liked it so much. It helps you identify more things. It says, number one, identify the 3 greatest accomplishments in 2009. Number two, analyze what you learned from each accomplishment. And then identify your, number three is identify your biggest disappointments of 2009. Analyze what you learned from each failure or disappointment. And then 5 is identify how you limited yourself and how can you stop it. Number 6, pragmatically review the information you have gathered. And then 7, use this information to astonish yourself in 2010. And it just gives a little write-up in each of the 7 steps. I thought it was really good. So I'm going to send that out to you today. I told Lydia we'll attach it to the outline, but we'll also make it available to all of you because I think it's a good piece to follow up on last week's energy. Okay, so today we're going to talk a little bit more about criteria for goal setting. You know, what is the criteria involved in goal setting? And last week we did talk about the purpose of goal setting and the need to do it, and everybody recognizes that. Now we're going to talk about criteria. So what are some ideas of how best to set goals and make, because poorly set goals are not going to work for you. So the idea is that you want to put all your energy into it to get the best possible quality goals you can. So our approach is to how do we set the best possible goals, put the best words to paper so that we can create the best results in our lives. So anyway, so let's look at that. And I love to use the design your life by choice and commitment, not by chance and circumstance. And if you haven't heard that quote from me before, you haven't been part of too many of my classes, but it's one of my favorites. I heard it in a self-development class, and I wrote it down, and it really hit me hard because it really was about us making choices and making commitments to create the results in our life. Otherwise, we're just like a blade of grass, and as the wind blows, so we blow, and so we go. And we want to be something more forceful. I think if you have a drive in your life to impact this world while you're on this earth, and boy, if it's ever been relevant to us, look around today about how critical it is for us to impact people's lives. We have so much going on that's negative in our society that it's a great time for us to make a difference. Not that any time isn't a great time, but it's, you know, make a difference by making choices and making commitments. So let's look at what this means to us. Number one, what am I willing to commit to? And commit is a huge word, and I want you to really understand that word. Get out Webster's Dictionary, look it up. Do yourself a favor to understand what commitment is. Because somebody can look back at your life and say, what have I been committed to? And I'm going to suggest the results that you create are what you show you what you're committed to. And for some of us, that's not a pleasant feeling, and I don't say that to try to bring you down or get you glum. I just say it because the neat thing is that you can always do something about it, you know, just start creating better results, being more committed to creating better results. And that's the neat thing about it, that you have that opportunity to commit to things to create greater results. But the idea is that the commitments are things that you say, not I'm going to try to do, because try is one of those words that I tell people to cross out of their dictionary. I just take black magic marker and erase it in dictionaries. And you can say, well, why, Mary Jo? It's a word in our vocabulary. I go, I guess it is a word, but you don't have to use it. There are a lot of words in our vocabulary in the Webster's Dictionary you don't use. And try ought to be one of them that you get rid of. And the whole reason for that is that people who typically, when you use the word try, you're giving yourself and setting yourself up for failure. You're setting yourself for not accomplishing it. Oh, I'm going to try to do that. When people tell you, well, I'll try to make that luncheon, 99% of those people don't show up. They're saying that just because now they have an excuse why they don't have to do it. Because they didn't commit to it, they just said they'd try. When they knew, a lot of them knew at the time they used that language that they were never going to do it because they never had the intent to be there. Or their schedule was so busy, it was just totally impractical. But they wanted to say that just to make you feel good. So avoid that. Either be committed to showing up or to commit that you're not going to be there. But be honest about it and be forthright about it. And that's an important step. It's an important step in the foundation of your goal setting, too, because I don't want you to set a goal to be presidential by January 15th when you knew that's, you know, pie in the sky languaging. Set some realistic goals, not things that, you know, you can't put your teeth into and say, I'm totally committed to creating that. My GPV goal for next year, I'm totally committed to creating it. So I didn't try to double my GPV in 1 year. At my level, you wouldn't want to do that, or you wouldn't want to commit to that because it's pretty outrageous, but it's something that you want to be able to sink your teeth in and say, yes, I can commit to that. Because then your integrity gets behind it. So that's the important thing. So look at the formula that I like to use comes out of some of the Clemmer work, and a lot of you have gone to Brian Clemmer's stuff, especially since Manitech kind of absorbed it in their YES programs. But it commitment is, I will do it. In other words, nothing will stand in my way. So it's called intent, and that's what Clemmer uses the word intent to mean commitment. What are you totally committed to? That's my intentionality. I intend to get something done, and the formula is intent plus mechanism equals result. But the uniqueness of this formula is that the mechanism part of it is really, you know, unimportant, because it's important to achieve the result, but it's unimportant for you to understand what mechanism is going to get you there. Because once you set your commitment, once you make a commitment, once you say, I'm totally committed to making this happen, it's incredible how many mechanisms will appear for you. Because now the energies in the universe get around you and surround you and support you. It's tapping into that number three. It's tapping into something greater than you, and that's what we want to do in our life, because otherwise we're very limited. That's why you look at handicapped people and people who, you know, Stovall is one of the people that comes to mind. He's blind, and the guy became a multimillionaire. He didn't let his blindness, or he didn't let his, you know, other people who have a handicap, they don't let their shortcomings get in their way. It's just how you view it. You get a commitment, you set your intent, and then you create a greater tomorrow, a greater reality. So how do you increase your intent? That's what the number one factor in this formula is how do I raise my intent? Because if I can raise my intent to a level that it truly becomes commitment, then I'll create the results. So, and remember earlier I said, how do I know what I was committed to in my life because of what I created? Well, this formula works backwards too. all your results show what you were, your intent was. Sometimes harsh, always fair. Sometimes harsh, always fair. Our results show what our intent was. So let's create different results. That then we have to have more intentionality. And how do I increase my intentionality? Three major ways to do that. Number one is visualization. That's why when people, you know, start announcing the new incentive, like that'll come out in January for us in Manatech, if you really want to be there and not just want but commit to being there, I tell people to help increase your intentionality around it is get posters and put them around your house so that you can see it every single day. So it becomes a part of your existence. Put it on your refrigerator, put it in your bathroom, put it above. I had one person, I should say, who put it above, taped a poster above their bed. When they woke up in the morning, there was this picture of Costa Rica on their ceiling. Yeah. Hard to do if you have high ceilings in your bedroom, but not too hard if you don't. So, but the idea is that how do I help you increase your intent, or how do you help yourself increase it? I can give you ideas, but visualization is gigantic. Another reason why we use the dream boards in Manatech, you know, a lot of us draft dream boards and we put that up in our office area so that we always are aware of, you know, what we're committed to creating in our lives. So visualization is huge. So use pictures, because visualization is worth, you know, 1,000 words. And so use pictures as well in your brain and keep reinforcing those as often as possible. Another way of increasing intentionality is to tell your family. So sit down with your family after you just go through your goal setting process and bring them on board with you. Tell them, okay, this is what my commitment is for 2010. I'm just letting you know. And some of you go, well, why should I do that with my kids? Well, of course you should do it with your kids. Nothing greater than you take this process to your children so that they learn the process for themselves. Because those kids are going to, they have their whole life ahead of them, and what a great experience. I wish my parents would have done this. My parents didn't work with me on goal setting and never did they allow me to share in any goals that they may have set for themselves, which I doubt they did, but who knows, they might have. But what a great experience for you to do that with your children. Because then I have a couple of families where the kids are setting their own goals as well. They make their own goals for the year. Do you want your kids to make goals around what they create in school or what they create in athletics or what they create with their church or their spiritual walk or how many books they read or what, they, you know, you can drive that by helping them participate with you in goal setting and then even doing a dream board together. I had families that did dream boards together as a family, what they wanted to create as a family. What a great thing that these kids now are part of a unit, so it's not just about them, it's not just about mom and dad, it's about, you know, the whole family together, working together to create results. So visualization is big with that. Contract with another, tell your family, get them in supporting you and behind you, and it also gets you an accountability set up. And then three is put something at risk. So make a commitment that you're going to do something. Somebody the other day called and said, Mary Jo, I'm going to pay you $1,000 to your charitable organization if I don't do XYZ. So they made a commitment to create something. And if they don't do it, they have to pay my foundation or make a contribution to my foundation, which is great. I love that as a result because we can always use money in our foundation. But it's just a neat thing. You just put something at risk. Some people use, give money to the a political party that you don't support. That's another way to do it. If that motivates you, that's fine. Whatever it is that would motivate you, they want to put something at risk. Your commitment really truly defines your results, and that's the importance of this exercise, that to look at what you're committed to. And I put this as a foundational step in setting goals as well, because when you set a goal, you need to have that commitment behind it. When you're drafting your goals, now let's get into the drafting part. First of all goals need to be SMART, and SMART stands for specific, measurable, achievable, risky, and timely. And it's a great acronym to use to know whether you've hit it on the head. And a lot of people I've worked with, people in my pathway class for years, and again, we'll have another pathway coming out, which is going to be a lot of fun because I'm incorporating the new Manatech system in it, which is just a delight, revamping materials for that. But the importance of SMART is that you get very specific on the goals. So you don't just make generalized statements. Be successful in Manatech. Is that specific? Well, Not really, and it's really not measurable either. So we work on these specific and measurable kind of hand in hand, that you need to know what you're, like somebody said, a lot of people, in fact, when they get into their personal goals, they say a better relationship with my spouse. And that's not very specific. So I tell people to drive themselves into what would make your marriage better. I mean, what's missing in your marriage that you would like to see happen? And almost 9-10 times out of 10, it has to do with time commitment. How much time do you spend one-on-one with your spouse? And that's what people are really looking for. So I said, great. So if you spent more time, just the two of you together, with no other interference or distractions, would that improve your marriage? And they go, yeah, that would improve my marriage. So we go around the horn with that idea, and we say, well, what would that look like? Like maybe you have a date night. You go on two date nights together on a weekly basis. And that's usually when I get the backlash of, oh, my gosh, two. Let's not be too ridiculous, Mary Jo. Let's go to one. And I go, okay, start with one. Whatever it is, I don't know what your current standard is in your relationship. But I think one date night, just two of you, will make a huge difference in your relationship, because we forget that we stop dating when we get married a lot of times, and we need to continue dating. So anyway, I work on that. But see, it's a lot easier. See how much more specific it is? You know that the result of spending more time together one-on-one will create a better marriage. Or you can say, what will create a better marriage for you? Well, my husband never will agree to go on, some marriage courses. You know, like they have all sorts of weekend conferences you can go to. And just set a goal that you'll go on at least two of those in the next 12 months, you know, and get your husband on board with the goals that you're setting. So, we know that that will improve the marriage. We know that. Now, will it improve it as far as it needs to go? I'm not suggesting that. I just like when I put amber toast in your body, I know it's going to improve your body, but I don't know how far that improvement will go, because every one of your bodies is different. But the idea is that you want to be specific, so get specific actions that are going to be out there. The second one is measurable, and make sure they're measurable. Like some people like to say, I want to make more money in Manatech. Well, that's specific that you want more money, but it's not measurable. I don't know how much more. More is not a measurable thing. You know, it's something that's non-determinable, you know. So in being a lawyer, we look for these kind of things all the time in contracts. I was just reviewing a lease for somebody the other day, and it said, if this happens, lessor will give lessee a fair amount of rental abatement. And I went, wow, I've never seen that language in a rental contract before. It kind of shook my consciousness, because fair is a word that's unmeasurable, right? Well, fair in terms of whose perspective. Fair for her could be something totally different than what's fair for me. I mean, it's just one of those, you would never write that. I don't know who drafted the contract, but I sure as heck would never use that language in a contract. Same with your contracts with yourself around your goals. You want to make sure they're measurable. And the reason we want them measurable is why? Well, when you say, I want to make more money, you want to make a commitment, what that looks like. How much money do I want to make? Where do I want to be financially in Manatech or in my other business, whatever goal that you're working with. The reason you want it measurable is because it's the only way you can be held accountable for it. Making more money in Manatech, you could spend in 2010 and get your GPV up by $1 and you've achieved your goal. But I don't think that's what you meant when you set the goal. So start really looking hard and long at what does that mean for you. And for some of you, you go, well, Mary Jo, I hate to put $5,000 more a month or $2,000 more a month or $1,000 more on a monthly basis. I go, well, what are you comfortable with? And then when you set the goal, you go, honor before business period five or honor before manifest or whatever. Okay, we're going to talk about timeliness on it. I am making an additional $500 or more on a monthly basis in my Manatech checks. Okay, so you notice the difference. I'm making at minimum. So you could be making $500 or more. You never cap yourself off, because then what happens to you is you fight so hard to hit that goal, and that's as far as you go. You want to be able to open up the possibilities for yourself from the universe that you could make 10 times that much right? So it's always place it as a or more in your when you make specific. You want to do amount of money that you would be, you know, which would be stretch for you out of your comfort zone, but you know, something doable. But you would really love to make more, but that would be doable for you. So make it measurable and make it specific. Achievable is another thing. Just like I said earlier, don't tell me you're going to be presidential in 30 days if you're a regional director today, unless you plan on, you know, contacting, you know, 100 people a day for the next month. If you want to do that, you can do that. That's a possibility, but it's not a probability. So don't, you know, put yourself in something that's, you know, not achievable by you or not something you're going to be willing to do the action to support it. So make sure it's achievable, and that doesn't mean that it's easy. Somebody told me once that they wanted to be regional director in 2000, you know, whatever. It'd be correspond to what are your goals for 2010? Well, I'd like to make regional director status by the end of the year. And I'm going to tell you that might be that's very achievable by you, but it's not pushing you outside your box at all. So achievable doesn't mean take the path of least resistance. I want you to make sure you're on a path of resistance because that's how you get into green and growing. Okay? So achievable, definitely, but not something that's so achievable that anyone without much effort could accomplish. And that gets into our next letter, R, risky. Risky means, risky to me reflects not the word that it's you're risking your life. It's risky means that it's out of your comfort zone. It's something that pushes you a little bit beyond. I mean, it would be real easy for me to say, in 2010, I just want to maintain my GPV, and that might even be a challenge. But it's not very risky for me. So I'm trying to do something risky. I want to see some growth, and I want to see some significant growth in 2010. So that number has to be something that's really out there for me. It gets me motivated and gets me in an action mode. So make sure that you're putting yourself in an action mode to create something better. And then finally, timely, it's got to be deadlines. There have to be time frames. It's either when you're going to start doing it or when you're going to complete it. Because some of these goals that you set are going to be habits, like, you know, that some of you want to start exercising. Well, that's going to be a start date. I exercise 20 minutes each and every day starting what date? Are you going to kick that off? Because once you set it to be each and every day, I don't need a finish date because it's going to be each and every day. But I need a starting date and when it's going to happen. Or some of you in your spiritual goals, you say, spend 30 minutes in scripture every day. And I go, when is it going to start? Put the starting date. Starting, you know, and you could say, I read scripture at least 30 minutes a day starting on January 1st, 2010. Whatever that is, right? So those are the kind of things, because we're talking about these being for 2010. So make sure timely. Make sure you got a time frame, either a start date. Every single one of your goals should have a date to it. Every single one. No matter what it is, it can have a date to it because it's either a start date or a completion date. Six categories I put on the list in our outline today because you want to be balanced. You're a human being that has many other things other than just Manatech in your life. And the greatness of this whole process of being involved with the company and network marketing and Manatech per se is that it's about building you as a complete human being. I want you to be in balance. I want you to have balance with all aspects of your life. I don't want you to be totally out of balance. I'm not going to drive you to drive yourself crazy with Manatech. I think you can do Manatech X hours a day. I have people doing it every, you know, from 15 minutes a day to, you know, 10 hours a day. Everybody's different. Everybody has a different commitment. For you, what does that look like? That's what it becomes. But you want to make sure whatever it is, 15 minutes or 10 hours a day, that the rest of your time is spent developing you professionally, intellectually, physically, spiritually, socially. All of those things you want to make sure that you're encompassing. And so work on all of them because what we're doing is we're building a better you. If you become a better you, your business is going to become a better business because you are that business. You are the core of that business. So work on all of those six areas when you set your goals. That might be a challenge for some of you. You can start with Manatech if that's what you want to do. That's okay, and that's probably where I'd have you start. And then go back, but don't leave those other things out because if you lose your family or you lose a spouse or you lose your spiritual walk or you lose other things, integrity and all the other stuff, by doing Manatech or doing something like this, then you have nothing. So really, make sure that you stay in balance. And you want to write down each of those goals and then write down what has kept you from reaching those goals to date. And I believe we have an attachment on today's outline that talks about, or was it last? Oh, what do you want to reach these goals? Why do you want to reach the goals? And then what will the consequences to you and others be if you fail to accomplish your goals? So it wasn't really about what has kept you in the past, but it's really important if you look at what has kept you in the past from achieving the goals, because it gives you an idea of maybe some of the limitations that you've put on yourself. And some people say, well, Mary Jo, I haven't put that on myself. And I go, choice, come from choice, come from personal responsibility. Don't get stuck and wallow in victim mentality. It's not ever going to serve you. So look at what has happened in your life that has caused you not to accomplish those, and don't go victim to other people. Take on personal responsibility for it. You know, it's not a bad thing. Personal responsibility is a terrific thing, because it's personal responsibility that allows us to create whatever we choose to create in life. So don't flee from personal responsibility. Grab onto it. So write down for each of your goals what's kept you from reaching those goals to date. I think that's a great supplemental exercise to them. And we may talk about more about that next week, because really this week is about starting that process of working on those goals for yourself, getting a smart understanding them. I'm going to pick on Manatech financial goals independent from the rest of them, because some of you have problems understanding what it's going to take to earn certain monies in Manatech. And I did a little revamp on this because we have new compensation plan concepts. So if you did this in the past with me, you may consider trying it again. The idea is that what do we know? We know that Manatech is a network marketing company, and we know that network marketing is a prospecting company. Our number one key activity is prospecting, which means what? It's we go out, we share with people. We love on people. We talk to them. We bring potential solutions to issues and needs in their lives, and we won't know what they are unless we listen to them. So we listen to people. We become great, great listeners to hear what the needs are, and then we support them with solutions for that. Potential solutions, because they may not select them. But that's how we work with people, and it's all about numbers. It truly is a numbers business, and the more you share and the more people you talk to, the greater your business will grow. Now, it's helpful to share the business. That will grow your business faster than just sharing the products. So you have to be always have that awareness around that we want to help try to support getting business builders in our organization. I gave you in the outline today some relationships just based on my experience working with associates, and of course, some of these numbers get skewed because you're going to come up with a barn burner every once in a while that signs up everybody you talk to, but I'm just trying to tell you on an average. When people are brand new associates in Manatech, assuming not a lot of networking experience, and some people have a lot of networking experience and nonetheless still show even weaker than brand new associate numbers. But the idea here is that what is the average person, if you're brand new stepping into Manatech, you know, the average I would say would sign up, you know, 1 to 2 out of 10 people they talk to. And why is that? Well, enthusiasm helps drive it, but they still have issues around credibility because a lot of people think they can do it on their own and they don't tap into their upline. They have a lot of fears, so they show that. They don't know how to respond to objections because they haven't gotten prepared. So there are a lot of things that they stumble over that you may have tried to help them with, but they're still stumbling. And I have some people that talk to tons of people. They're new in my organization or have been over the last 5-6 months, and they've only signed up 2 or 3 people, and one of the main reasons is they don't even know how to bring up Manatech yet. They are so uncomfortable. And I, you know, coaching, sometimes we can hit our head against a wall, but it's we just keep working at it. It's called, you know, persistence. So we never give up on people. We always, you know, work with them as long as they're willing to work hard, we work with them. But we want to try to get them in the right direction. And it's important, though, that we're out there talking to lots of people. But new associates, your sign-up ratios will be 10 to 20%. Again, there could be people that are doing 70%. There could be people at 50. But your average new associates will fall in this area. Once they get trained, and I'm talking about maybe 3 to 6 months into it, you've done a training with them. They've gone to done trainings on the Internet. We have our structured training classes that we're going to be giving. It's terrific, and we get them the model, and we get them, you know, help, and maybe put them through pathway class or whatever. Now, all of a sudden, you've helped them realize about natural selling, about listening to people, about establishing what their needs are and allowing them to come to the conclusion in their life that they need to do something about it. and then being there ready for them with a potential solution. You know, that all of a sudden they're going to go from 10 to 20% to 20 to 40%. So they're going to sign up 4 out of 10 people they talk to, which is great. And why is this important? It's important because it's your downline. You want your people to be successful. Number one, when they're successful, you're successful. But that's not even, to me, it's I want them to be successful. I can walk away and be totally selfless in this. All I want to do is drive their success. So that's why you train them. That's why you get them ready. That's why you do some coaching calls with them to let them continue to give them language and help them support them in being the best they can be. And then finally, when you look at seasoned people, 2 to 3 years with personal development, notice I'm putting with personal development training and listening skill training. Because I think people can get very seasoned in this industry and still be really poor in terms of their prospecting numbers, their close ratio, because they never have gone through personal development training or haven't allowed it to sink in and support them changing their lives, or they've never developed good listening skills. Because that is so crucial. So those people can even with 2 to 3 years without those things, they may still be back in the 10 to 20%. But seasoned people, you're talking 50 to 70% of the people that you talk to. And I feel at this stage, when I talk to people, that's probably about, I would say, at least 1 out of 2. It's rare that I don't get people started, but there still is that group of people. And it doesn't bother me because there's still that group of people that no matter how much I would talk to them, it wouldn't matter how much information they had. It wouldn't matter how convinced they were. They have a roadblock going on in their head, either around scarcity mentality or they have roadblocks about network marketing or something that's blocking them off. So you're always going to have a certain percentage that fall in that category. So that just gives you an idea, sign-up ratios of what you can expect. So why do I give you these numbers? Because when you're talking about this being a prospecting business and how many people you're signing up, you need to know, I have an expectation of how many people does it take me to talk to before I get some people involved, and this gives you that ratio. Cold telemarketing, this is the toughest business, I think. I think that I can't do it, so those of you that are doing it, great. If you're getting results, that's terrific. I find it very difficult because I don't like to get 900 no's before I get a yes. I just don't like the negativity. And I don't like to talk to people about things they have absolutely no interest in. I'd rather develop that interest in a conversation. And I can't, you know, cold telemarketing, when you're calling people, it's just hit and miss. But there are people that do this. There are also Manatech associates who built their entire organizations around this. But now they've abandoned it. So I know that too. So you can get a lot of different opinions out there. Terry Petrovic is a guy that, you know, did a lot of cold calling in his early years, and I think Tim Altfader as well, but I don't know how convicted those guys are about. I know Terry doesn't teach it anymore. I don't know about Tim, but you know, it's just a tough business. But you've got to decide for you if that's something you want to do and you want to stay home and dial and, you know, get calluses on your finger and dialing all those numbers. That's up to you as well. But it is a way you could build this business. The next thing, using the above assumptions, you know, about results, you can look at what would our comp plan produce for you? And I'm assuming in this scenario that you come in as an all-star because I have you earning power bonuses in the income levels. And it just says number of sign-ups per period. If you sign up 3 per period, 5 per period, 10 per period, you can see there's a considerable difference in income. And I just gave you the first 3 periods that income projects even greater. If you go down 6 periods, 9 periods, 12 periods, it's huge. Because the difference of bringing 10 people in versus 5 is huge. And then you get a multiple of that, so that just, but that'll give you the income flow. And then you get a multiple of that when you start looking at, well, what if I bring in business builders? Wow, what a difference that makes as well. Because business builders mean I'm just showing you your own personal growth in income based on how many people you're bringing in. I'm not assuming that any of those people are necessarily bringing in anyone else. So the idea here, people, is to find business builders, and we know that the way to find business builders, you have to present the business plan. And so many of you are still stuck in product, and you can do that. You can go out there and just stay stuck in product. But I really think that even if you're stuck in product, don't you want other people to help other people with products? So isn't that the business? Yeah. Maybe you just feel uncomfortable, talking about the numbers. I think the yes brochure is terrific for that. I think it's really well laid out. It really shows people how effective they can be and earn income on a very quick basis, the bonus income, and then look at their residual stream. So start looking at that and seeing if it doesn't work for you, but don't complain that your business isn't growing fast enough if you're not presenting the business to other people. We need to be doing that. We need to be opening up that pot, especially now when so many people are looking for alternative streams of income. And then income for leadership level, I just gave you the 2007 numbers. I guess we didn't have 2008 numbers. I know we don't have 2009 because we haven't finished, but that just gives you where they were, the income range at, in 2007. And I think 2008 are out there, by the way, but that's 2007. And they may actually be in my Monday night presentation. But you get the income levels, and that's just the reason I like to give this to people. Manatech allows you to publish the chart that they have on their website, so you want to make sure you get the accurate numbers, and you always also want to make sure that you put disclaimers underneath it if you're going to publish it and hand it out to prospects. This is just a training session, so I don't have those same constraints. But you don't want to represent to people, misrepresent to them how much income is available. So you want to make sure you have disclaimers at the bottom of it about the income levels. But it does give the people, because this is the Kiyosaki approach. I mean, this is like, why am I going into business? Why do I want to be an entrepreneur? Why do I want to be in that B quadrant? Because that generates cash flow. It's not. It's leveraging off of people instead of exchanging time for my, I mean, exchanging my time for dollars. So the idea is this is why you get involved in network marketing. This is the main reason why most people get involved in network marketing is because they want to eventually have a check coming in the mail every month and help support the family and themselves as they move forward. So that's why you get these different directions. And, of course, you can put platinum on there as well. That gets up into the, you know, they make 30 on average, I think, about $30,000 a month. So that's pretty cool. That's a lot of money. But that's what presidential directors are about. Presidential directors and, you know, gold, silver, platinum, bronze, it's about getting that additional pay. So you want to apply that to your business. So if you look at how many people you need ordering $100 and you just start going out there and making the contacts to meet that. And this is kind of, we looked at what they do in South Africa and they really work on how many contacts you're getting a week. They work, it's a number thing. So is the South Korean model. They're all based on numbers, and I'm just trying to suggest to you, although the U.S., we tend to have an adversity towards that, we got to do the same thing. If you want to be effective in growing your business, if you want to meet the goals you set, you've got to know that it's about numbers. It's about talking to people and getting people started on the products. After you get your goals written, working on them, you know, as you're writing them, review the goals. I gave you some ideas. Number one, make sure they all are personal. A lot of people write their goals and they fail to put I. I should be the first word in each of your goals. I. Okay? It all starts with you. When you don't put I in your goals, you tend to be disassociating with them already. If you're disassociating with them in the goal-setting process, I don't even want to tell you where you're going to be in terms of results. Pretty evident because you've already disassociated. So you want to grab onto them. You want ownership in your goals, right? Make sure they're all in present tense. I don't use the future tense word will. Will doesn't exist because every time you say, I will do that in the future, what have you just done? You've just put a P on your forehead for procrastination. You don't have to do it today because it's future. So when you use present tense, I am presidential director on or before December 31st, 2010. That brings it today. I am presidential. It has a different, it has a different impact on your psyche. And if you don't get the importance of that psyche yet, boy, you're feeding the wrong, you know, you're feeding the wrong tummy in your life. Because that psyche, your psychology, your number two is what really helps you produce all the results that you produce in your life. It's incredibly powerful. So feed it the right information. I am presidential director. I am making X dollars on a monthly basis on or before. I am. So that's kind of how your goals will look. Or I make, right? I am making or I make, either way. Make sure they're all in the, so I make $4,000 per month in Manatech by September 2010. So you want to use that all the time to make sure that you're professing present tense, today, now, what's happening, not something that's down the road and in the future. All right? You want to use live action verbs or feeling verbs. You want to make sure that it's active. You want to stay in the active sense, not the inactive sense. And that's important for you to do because we're all taking action. So watch out with what the verbs are that you're using in your, so you're not just muted. D, be brief. You don't want to be long. Your goal should be short, concise, and very readable, legible, doable, very, you know, focused. So make sure it's brief. Some people break goal and they'll put but if this and this. And I go, there aren't any but ifs in goal setting. There's just statements, right? Statements. Be positive, not negative. In other words, I lose 20 pounds. We ask people not to do a loss of 20. It's what are you going to weigh? What's the weight? I will weigh no more than 140 pounds on or before March 31st. There you go. Not about how much you're going to lose. And the reason behind that is that we have a mental state. There's a psychology around loss. What is it? That we need to go out and find it. The same thing applies. There was a great article and write-up and a great teacher that would taught this about weight loss. It was amazing to me that people lose weight. They go, oh, I lost 80 pounds. Well, then all they want to do is go out back and find it because your psychology kicks in that you want to go find it. And the last thing we want to do is go and find those 80 pounds and put them back on. So the idea is let's stick to what weight we're going to achieve. And, again, make sure they all qualify as SMART goals. The next step is share your goals with a support team. Nothing better than having an accountability and support team, a team to support you in achieving what you want to. Write them on 3x5 cards. Carry them with you. Keep them in your purse. Make them evident to yourself every single day. Those goals should be read every day. Every day. They should be a part of your life. They're important. If your life's important to you, they will be important to you. Know the results of your goals, the consequences of not meeting them. I gave you a sheet to fill out that kind of says, you know, what goals you set and the importance of meeting them. All of that needs to happen. And then number 7 is make the connection with your belief system. The link between optimism, responsibility, and goal setting is crucial to stop the disconnect. One of my people in my organization brought this up the other day. She's in my 90-day challenge program, and I thought it was there's some real good meat to it, so I thought I'd pass it on to you because some of you have had trouble with goals before, and you know, I think part of it might be the same problem this person had, which was a disconnect. And she said she never saw the connection between optimism and goal setting. And so what I did is I copied for you on today's outline the day 55, Be Optimistic, which is part of our 90-day challenge. And I just want to read the part that really is, all of it's meaningful and you can enjoy the whole thing, but it's the part that really applies to this goal-setting process is in saying you are an optimist, you are saying more than that you expect life to get better. The optimists go beyond holding certain beliefs about the future. They also display certain attitudes. An optimist attitude allows you to remain optimistic during uncertain times. So what is this saying about goal-setting? It's about not only setting the goals, but maintaining an attitude towards those goals all the time, not just on the moment you write them, but there's a continuous relationship between you and that goal, and optimism plays a huge role in it. Transfer the negativity of any situation into opportunities for growth. So in other words, when something doesn't happen right, you don't get caught up in the event. You go back and have that optimistic viewpoint of the goal, and you can convert those situations into opportunities and progress and achievement. No matter how realistic and rational we are, we have no choice but to focus our attention and attitudes. Optimists choose to focus primarily on thoughts, events, and interpretations that induce joy, encouragement, pleasure, and constructive activity. Effective optimism requires understanding the part that we play in bringing about the results we want. An optimist realizes that goals and excellence can only be achieved through personal effort. Wishful thinking cannot substitute for active pursuit of the life we want. Taking responsibility for our actions and attitudes requires a strong sense of purpose. Without a clear vision of a destination, we will find it very hard to get anywhere. Great languaging. That's totally in support of what we've been talking about the last couple of weeks. So what's your assignment? Your assignment for this week is to draft your goals. Get to work on them. And some of you have already been starting to do that. Don't forget there's 6 different categories. Make sure they're SMART. And when you get them done, as you get them done, you want to fill out the sheet that I've attached, which is why do you want to reach these goals for your management business? What will the consequences to you and others important to you if you fail to accomplish those goals? The price we pay is a great incentive for getting something done. Understanding the price we'll pay if we don't accomplish it. Okay, everybody. I love you, love you. Have a great week. Now, I know this is tough because we're getting closer and closer to Christmas. We have a lot of distractions. We have a lot of diversions. But your 2010 is absolutely crucial for the rest of your life. So what are you going to do different? How are you going to manage it? How are you going to step into it in a very different way? I just suggest you choose to be different. Choose to do something different and create greater results. Love you all. Thanks.